Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday morning. Friday, November the 28th, 2025. 12 and a half minutes past the hour. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. I know I did. And we're back here live on Friday morning, and it is the last Friday in the month of November. And that can mean only one thing in Ohio. It is the eve of the big game. Ohio State versus Michigan. The rivalry games to end all rivalry games in college football. It happens tomorrow, 12 p.m. on the Fox Network. Ohio State has not won in 4 years. The pressure is high. People are excited. People are talking about it. And somebody who's going to be up in Ann Arbor, Michigan tomorrow, where the game will be played, is a gentleman who joins us today. We're so glad to have him on this Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving, the OSU Superfans Superfan, ESPN Hall of Famer, Buckeye Guy. Buckeye Guy, good morning.
Oh, man. Scott, you're right, man. Thanksgiving was outstanding.
What was the best thing you ate yesterday?
It was always the canned jelly cranberry sauce.
You know, I am so glad that you mentioned that, because so many people now are into making their own cranberry sauce and using live cranberries. There are people, and I know this to be fact, there are people in my own family who absolutely will not eat cranberry sauce unless it comes out of that can and makes that plop.
Man, let me tell you, I seen my wife, she jiggled it out of it on this beautiful serving plate, and she sliced it perfectly, and I had two slices, and it just made everything much better.
Buckeye Guy, what were you thankful for this year?
Man, thankful for just my family, my friends, and life itself.
As we all should be. And I'll tell you, something that a lot of people are thankful for tomorrow is watching this big game, the rivalry games to end all rivalry games, maybe especially this year, because Ohio State has not won for 4 years in a row. But there is so much going into this game tomorrow, maybe more than I have heard or seen in a long time because of that 4-year drought for Ohio State. But for people who feel Ohio State might win, the Michigan argument that's being made is that the game is in Ann Arbor. It's not at Ohio State. And I was looking this morning. Ohio State is only a 10-point favorite. The margin of victory last year was much larger.
Yes, but you know as well as I do, Scott, you can throw the numbers out the window when it comes to this particular rivalry. Now, I do want to point out, in the past 20 years, The Ohio State University is 16-4.
That is true. But unfortunately, the last four have been right in a row. I think that's the problem.
No. Certainly, it's overwhelming. I couldn't believe, and we talked about this, that they won two in a row. Then they won the turkey that you so eloquently put. The turkey? Three in a row? You got to be kidding me. There's no way in the world that The Ohio State University is going to lose three in a row to that team up north. And you mentioned that the game is in Ann Arbor this year? Dude, you got to walk down 99 flights of stairs to get down to where I sit. And I sit in the front row, right in the end zone, right behind the goalpost. Boy, I'm telling you, This is a must-win if you've ever seen one.
Well, and I think that's where the pressure is coming on both sides of this game. Ohio State obviously wants to win because they're undefeated. They haven't won in 4 years, and I would guess they want to go on to some bowl games this year, maybe be national champions again. But on the Michigan side, they don't want to lose to Ohio State at home in Ann Arbor. They certainly don't want that to happen after beating them 4 years in a row. So there is a lot of pressure on both ends.
They call it the big house for a reason. Dude, let me tell you something. That place is humongous. It's big. It's loud. And we just heard about the weather. The weather report, it's not even going to crack 32 degrees, which is freezing. And so that's going to play a big, big role in this game tomorrow.
You know, I'm worried about you, Buckeye guy, because it sounds like you might get snowed in Ann Arbor tomorrow.
Well, that's okay. I'll have my heated clothes on that my wife found on Amazon. I've got a heated vest, heated toe warmers, feet warmers, hand warmers, hat. I mean, I'll be bundled up even if I do get snowed in.
Well, that lets my mind rest a little easier because I want you to be warm tomorrow and I want you to be happy watching this game. Now, something interesting also tomorrow, it's the 50th anniversary of the 1975 OSU-Michigan game in which OSU came behind from a 14-7 deficit to win that game 21-14.
We can use all the stats in the world, and that's a good stat. And you pulled one out of your hat there, because I remember I was a lad at that time watching those games. Man, those were great players. Archie Griffin had just won two Heisman trophies in 73 and 74. And in 75, dude, we had teams. We had players. And folks, this meant a lot to everybody. Just as it is today, tomorrow's game will be probably the most watched football game. I'm sorry, most watched game in America. It's the Ohio State University. It's the team up north, the Wolverines. We need every bit of thing that we can. We need all the good luck. We need all the good karma to come back with a victory.
Now, Buckeye guy, take us through your trek to Ann Arbor. When do you leave? What spots do you hit?
Okay, here we go. We're going to make it good. We want to leave in between times. We're going to get out of here about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning here in Columbus, Ohio, drive up, take our time, see all the sights, and ride right past Marion, Ohio, and we get in to Ann Arbor. We got to check the spots first. I always like to do a dry run. Ride by the stadium. I want to see exactly where I'm at. Pioneer High School is right across the street. That's where Coach Harbaugh and his brothers went to high school, and Jack Harbaugh, Mr. Harbaugh, coached football there. I want to make sure everything is in place. I got to go and check out and get the best exit route, because by the time I get back to my car, everybody should be gone, because I'll be celebrating in the front row in the end zone with all to see.
Buckeye guy, when you're up there, what is the best place to stop and have dinner? Where are you going to be having dinner tonight?
I'd like to have a... It's funny to say so. I'll probably have some leftover turkey sandwiches and just stay close to the vest, as Coach Strucker would say. No going out for old Buckeye guy. No hitting the streets. No going to restaurants. Stay in my hotel. If my hotel has a little commissary or anything like that, I'll deal with it there.
So relax and get ready for the game. Now, Buckeye guy, as we head into this game tomorrow, what does it mean this year? Four losses in a row in Ann Arbor, coming off a national championship. What does this game mean?
This is the biggest game in the Ohio State University's history. This is a must win. You have to win. Now, the only thing saving grace we had was last year was the college football playoff, and we won everything. We beat everybody. We beat Tennessee. I flew out to Pasadena, as you know. We played Oregon there. We left there, flew all the way across the country to Dallas, and we played Texas there. We beat them on the scoop and score. And we left there and flew all the way to Atlanta to play Notre Dame and the Fighting Irish. We were successful there. That was the only saving grace after losing for the fourth time to the team up north. It was not an ideal outcome. We will take the national championship. Now, that was highly improbable that the Ohio State University or anybody could do that. That was the first one that we had all those teams in there. Man, Scott, we got to take care of business tomorrow.
So it's a must-win tomorrow. Buckeye guy, if for some reason Ohio State should not win, what happens?
Just, the sky is falling.
The sky will cave in Ann Arbor tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The sky will fall. I mean, there'll be mass anarchy, you know. You got to win this game, man. You got to win this game for all the little kids out there that root for the team. You got to win this game for all the old folks like myself have been following the team for years. You got to win this game for the former players. You got to win this game for the future players. It's so much riding on this game that you got to win it. And it will solidify Coach Dave's place in the pantheon, the history of the Ohio State University, if he can come back and be 2-4, because he's currently 1-4. A lot of people don't even understand that Coach Dave has won a game in the series.
And if tomorrow, God forbid, he should lose, what happens to Coach Day then?
Well, I'll tell you. Not only to Coach Day, to the university, to the folks, Buckeye Nation, it'll be a you know, you let some of the air out of your balloon. You know, you rain on the parade. It's all of those things, you know. It's a sad day in Ohio and around the country and world for the millions and billions of Ohio State fans if, in fact, this didn't come out and go the right way.
We certainly don't want 5 losses in a row. Now, Buckeye Guy, what is the official prediction for tomorrow's game?
Oh, we just got to win. If we win 3-2, which is highly improbable, but possible, if we win by a point, Scott, I'm telling you, I don't got any predictions. I'm sorry, but I'll tell you, I'll be there rooting on the team in the front row from right behind the goalpost with a bird's eye view.
Do you think it will be a high or a low scoring game?
We heard last night on Thanksgiving, talk about Thanksgiving, what am I thankful for? One of our great wide receivers, Cornell Tate, has been cleared to play. He's been a bit under the weather, and so has our phenom, Jeremiah Smith, which was outstanding in the college football playoffs from last year. So we need everybody in place. We need everybody doing their job. We need everybody pulling for the bucks. We need good karma. We need the ball to bounce the right way.
Do you think it will be close?
No. No. We'll beat them 14 to 17 points. In my mind.
So Ohio State will win by 14 to 17 points.
Easy.
All right. Well, Buckeye Guy, I do want to let the listening audience know that the big game, the biggest game in college sports, the big rivalry game, Ohio State-Michigan, will kick off tomorrow, 12 p.m. on the Fox Network. And our guest this morning, opening up the day after Thanksgiving show, OSU superfan Buckeye Guy. You will see him at the game. He will be making the trek to Ann Arbor starting later today. Buckeye Guy, have a safe trip and beware of all the snow, and we'll talk to you after the big game.
Let's go Bucks, man.
Thanks, Buckeye Guy. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, well, a 14-7 point spread there for the Buckeyes. We'll see how that all goes. Now, joining us in studio this morning, Bob Welsh is back with us today for our day after Thanksgiving show. And joining us this morning as well, one of my favorite people. He was just in here a few weeks ago talking about the Prospect Park levy, which did pass. That all ended very, very well. Former Major League umpire Larry Barnett, and he'll be with us this morning having some fun talking about his career. And we will top the WGH Christmas tree this morning. So glad to have Larry with us for that. Now, one thing that's going to happen today is Larry will be joining the Upper Crust Society. Now, Bob, tell us how this all came to be.
Well, the Upper Crust Society originated, I think, 4 years ago now.
Maybe more than that.
Maybe more, maybe five. It was a way to help appease Scott's feelings after he was denied the sign of bun at Tony Packo's.
Which, that's all been fixed now. That's all been fixed.
Once Tony figured out that Scott was in the Upper Crust Society, you know, that they welcomed him back with open arms and let him sign a bun. And, so it opens doors for people, you know.
So after that, give us the list of people who are in the Upper Crust Society in the last 4 to 5 years.
Through the years, we've inducted Mary Ellen Withrow, Buckeye Guy, who was just on the air. And actually, I have a question for Buckeye Guy.
Too late. He's gone.
Is his wife known as Buckeye Gal?
I don't know. I don't know. She's making the trip, though, I think.
Making the trip. George Gasotis.
Mary Ann Michaels.
Former
Mayor Jack
former
Kellogg.
Mayor Jack Kellogg. Bernard Donegan and Scott Bailey.
Tim Bailey, former sheriff. You're still tired from Thanksgiving. Yeah. I can tell. Okay.
I've had an awful cup of coffee this morning.
Now, Bob, what happens with the Upper Crust Society? How does this take shape?
Well, the induction ceremony begins with signing a pizza crust, and we're getting some grimaces here. But we sign a pizza crust, and then we take a photo and make a plaque honoring the inductee with some pertinent information and everything, and then the inductee receives the plaque to proudly hang on their bare walls, because I'm sure they have nothing else to hang on the wall.
No. And then we present that plaque on December the 11th. So we have the signing of the pizza crust today, and then you take that back to Columbus. You put this all together, and it comes on a plaque, and on December the 11th, we present the plaque. And this year's honorees are Larry Barnett and longtime journalist here in Marion, Bob Bender. So two better people you could not have. And it's great to have Larry here this morning, because we're going to top this Christmas tree before 11 a.m. this morning. So there'll be a lot of action here in the studio this morning. So Larry's already with us. Larry, so glad you could come in this morning and help us celebrate the kickoff of the holiday season, as well as join the Upper Crust Society here.
Well, it's quite an honor to be here. I didn't realize what I was coming for, but if I have to sign a piece of pizza, that's great. I don't mind that.
Now, Larry, are you a fan of pizza?
Pardon me?
Are you a fan of pizza?
Oh, yeah. Look at me, and can you tell? My wife said I was putting on a little weight, and I said, just get the urn bigger.
Well, we got a little ways before the urn, I hope, Larry.
So.
Yeah. Now, Larry, you were in here last talking about the Prospect Park levy. It passed overwhelmingly. How great does that feel?
Oh, it's super. We had not had a raise down there. I've been on the park board now since I retired 24 years, and we had never had to ask for a raise. And then the people came through. There's just everything cost is going up. Fuel cost. We have two mowers that run, two gators that run, two people that work there. But it was just beautiful that they support the park. They love the park as much as I do, and I'm very thankful.
Now, Larry, what was your Thanksgiving like?
You know, it was a little tough this year. My wife had the flu.
Oh.
And so we were supposed to have 30 people at the house yesterday, and we ended up having me and her. So the kids didn't come up from Columbus. So, but she's doing well now, and it was just we had to cancel it, basically.
Was it kind of nice just to have a quiet Thanksgiving, or did you miss the big to-do that it normally is?
Well, I miss the girls, yeah. And I miss my grandson Carson coming up, and my son-in-laws. And so, yeah, I miss that.
Yeah. What were you thankful for this year?
I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful that I'm trying to get closer with God. I'm trying to do that. I fall short many, many days. But, you know, I just look at life a little different. I'm thankful for what I've been given, my career. I couldn't ask for a better thing.
What brought up this spiritual journey that it sounds like you're on?
I think it's age. It's age.
When you get to the final innings.
I never thought of it that way. But I always tell everyone my favorite song now is A Little Closer, Walk With Thee. But no, I just I go to church every Sunday. But I do. I fall short. Sometimes I think I swear too much. And then my wife reminds me of that. But that may be from baseball. I don't blame baseball for that. That's just my shortcomings. But no, I enjoy going to church and listening, and I really do.
Well, we all have those moments in life, but we're not perfect. That's for sure.
No.
Now, Larry, you turned 80 this past January.
January, I'm going to be 81.
I know you're getting close to 81 now. What was it like to turn 80?
Sort of scary. The six umpires that worked the 75 World Series, which was my first one, I'm the only one still alive.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes. I told my wife the other day, I said, when I pass, I hope I go up, not down. If I run into Earl Weaver and Billy Martin, I've made a wrong turn. If they're here, they greet me. No, I don't mean that. I shouldn't say that about them. But, Andy, I guess you know that you're at the tail end of your career and your life, I think. I don't know how long I have here. None of us know.
But you're in good shape.
I feel good. They did a complete body scan of me, and the only thing they found was some arthritis in my back. So I'm good for another 100,000 miles.
So maybe you're just mid-game. Maybe you're not in the later innings yet.
Well, let's not push this thing.
No, that's right.
When I try to stand up, that's when I have
That's when
problems.
You notice that yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Larry, as we sit here this morning, the holiday season is underway. If you drive by any store this morning, people are shopping. That's what they're doing. Do you like the holidays?
They're okay. I don't get into any of the shopping. In fact, we quit giving the girls and men in the family anything. We give them money.
Yeah.
And let them buy what they want. And I tell them, don't buy your mother and I anything, because if we want something tomorrow, we'll go get it. Yeah. And we do that 365 days a year. So I really am not. Christmas time, when the girls were little, we'd have four or five bags of trash to go out in the garbage. Now we'll be lucky to have one.
Now, do you still decorate the house?
You know, there isn't a thing up at our house yet. I don't know. I don't know. I was hoping my son-in-laws would come up and do that. I hate to do stuff like that.
You know, decorating is a chore. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's a big chore. Mm-hmm. It's a big chore. How are things over in Prospect?
Everything's good.
Good. Good.
That's a little piece of heaven.
You know, so many people love Prospect. What is it about Prospect, this little community of is it still under 1,500?
It's around 1,000.
Yeah.
Every time a lady has a baby, a guy leaves town. So the
somebody has to move.
Well, now I'm beating on the town. No, it's just a nice place to live. Like I tell people, I could have lived any place I want. We had umpires that lived in Hawaii, and I could have lived any place, but I just love I love Prospect. It was home.
You know, last time you were here, Larry, as I said, we were talking about the Prospect Park levy. But one thing we got into, we were talking about some of your career as a major league umpire. And I got to thinking, you said you had kept a lot of the angry letters that were sent back in 1975 during the World Series. What other items have you kept from your career?
My wife has a ton of stuff. She was basically been the collector. We would get the lineup cards every day. When I first started, I just throw them in the trash after the game. You work the plate. But she made me save them all. Well, she has all those.
That's something.
And, the lineup cards from the Ripken game were sold. We gave those to Bowling Green. And with the money from that, we have a fully funded scholarship at Bowling Green.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Now, do you still have the umpire uniform?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, they're a little tight now. I think they shrunk. No, you keep those. You get them every year. You get so much stuff, it's unbelievable. I've given a lot of stuff away. They have a museum down in Nitro, where I was born, West Virginia, and they're constantly getting stuff from me down there. And I have to say that they got some lineup cards from the opening day of Jacobs Field, and my wife took a picture of them and sent them. She won't give them the originals. But that's sort of neat. We go down there, and it's Lou Burnett's in there, Kathy Mateo, and myself, all three from Nitro. Mm. And so we have a museum down there.
Now, do people ever ask you to get in the umpire uniform or come umpire things for people?
I don't do that. No. I probably couldn't. But I haven't tried those on for a long time. I've been retired since I was 54.
54.
So I'm 80 now, so I've been out a long time. But no one's ever asked, you know.
What is the secret to being a good umpire?
Handling situations. I remember when I was at the umpire school, I was 19 years old, and I finished number one in my class on field work. The gentleman that finished number one in rules did get one wrong on the test. He lasted 2 weeks in the minor leagues. He couldn't take a rule and apply it to a situation on the field. It's handling people. I was a crew chief in the American League for 20 of my 31 years, so I was responsible for a crew. Mm-hmm. And I guess I had the talent to do it.
I guess so.
I did an all-star game, a World Series, and a playoff before my 30th, going into my 30th birthday.
You know, I was thinking, we all remember the 1975 World Series and the kerfluffle that came with that. But other than that, what is the worst argument you ever got into with a manager? Or somebody who was unhappy with one of your calls.
Well, that was the worst. I mean,
that was the worst. Lost.
Oh, by far.
Yeah,
by far. You all have arguments. I mean, when you umpire, you can eject someone every day if you want to throw a bomb in the middle of something.
Yeah.
You walk away from the young umpires will do that, and I did that. My first year in the league, I led the league in ejections with 18. My last year I umpired, I had one.
One.
So, I mean, you handle situations and you mature. You learn to handle people and you can do it, you know, different ways.
I would guess it's a lot of handling people over the years. Yeah. Bob, what would you think would make a good umpire?
I would think you would need to, like I said, be personable, but be able to make a split-second decision and then stand by that decision.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, be tolerant of those who don't like that decision.
Got to have the courage of your convictions.
Well, sure, it's pause, read, and react. That's what umpiring is.
Yeah,
you pause, see the play, you react to the play, and you react, and then you pause, read, and react. You read it and you react.
Now, when you see the play happen, how quick do you know what it is? A ball, a strike?
Well, you got to follow it.
You got to follow it.
You know, they talk about a lot of umpires. I had an umpire on my crew that umpired with tunnel vision.
Yeah.
He could only see like that. You track the ball. And you let the ball hit the glove, then you call it.
You know, I would think being out there for 9 innings, that what if your mind ever wandered as the ball was coming?
Well, that's when you get in an argument.
That's when it could be a bad day out there.
You're going to have a bad day if you had to inject four guys the first inning.
That's right. That could easily happen. What is the best game you were ever a part of?
Oh, cheesy. Probably the Ripken game was history.
Yeah.
When he broke Gehrig's record. Mm-hmm. Then in Cleveland, I had the All-Star game. I had to play it up there. And that was a great game. I think Alomar hit the home run to win it for the American League. Those are neat things.
What makes a good baseball game?
I like a good pitching game, but a lot of people like a lot of runs scored. Whomever is paying the bill, I hope they get what they want, because I love the game of baseball, and I'm prejudiced when I say it. I think it's the greatest game going.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a reason for saying that. I was a part of it my whole life, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud of the game. They have some problems, and they'll work them out.
What a World Series we had this
year. Yes.
What'd you make of that?
Well, I was not rooting for the Dodgers, but I was rooting for the American League because I was in the American League. So I always root for the American League. I don't have anything. I always told Sharon, I said, Cleveland will never be in the World Series as long as I'm alive. Okay? Because she was an Indian fan. Her father was an Indian fan. And by golly, they won. And they went to the World Series. Mm-hmm. And I was going up to Cleveland to get their tickets for her and her dad. Went to the World Series by themselves. And she's leaving the house. I said, where are you going? She said, I'm going to the cemetery. I said, what for? I said, I'm going to get you a plot because you're going to die. My father-in-law, I could have given him $40 million. That would have been any happier. He went with his daughter, one of his daughters, and he enjoyed the World Series to see Cleveland. So they were happy.
You know, this past year when the World Series was happening and it went into extra innings, mm-hmm. and the Dodgers pulled it off, so many people were watching that game.
Yeah.
It was the first time in quite some time, mm-hmm. I had heard people talking to that degree about the World Series.
It was exciting.
It was great.
It was beautiful. Well, you know, in the 75 series, four of those seven games went extra innings. They called that the Super Series. Mm. So Kirk Cowdy sort of ruined my show, but that's okay. That's another story.
Yeah, well, you know, Kirk Cowdy, who was the voice of a lot of sporting events back in those days.
He was the voice of the Red Sox, first of all.
He certainly was. That was his area. You know, it's interesting you bring that. I want to talk about that as the show goes along this morning, but I was looking last night at some of the newspaper articles that were written during that whole kerfluffle back in 75.
You call it a kerfluffle. I call it a war.
Well, yeah, it got ugly that year. It got ugly. You know, and I did not realize for a lot of years that you blamed a lot of that on Kirk Gowdy.
Well, it was him. He buried me on NBC. He got fired over that. NBC fired Kirk Gowdy over that.
Why do you think he buried
him? He was a Boston Red Sox announcer.
He was a fan, yeah.
He was a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the man.
Yeah.
Tony Kubek was with him, and Tony was very good and fair. Our job, if you don't want to argue and have problems, probably should get another job. That goes with the game, but he was just, he just buried me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's someone sent a letter and threatened to shoot me during the national anthem of Game 6 in Boston. Well, needless to say, the other five umpires really didn't want to stand next to me. And I remember Game 7, I'm on second base. Pete Rose was on second. Joe Morgan walked for Cincinnati. There's a Boston pitching change. And Morgan walked over to talk to Rose at second. And I got right in between them. Rose looked at me and he said, Larry, get away from me. And I won't say it on here, it may be a lousy shot. And well, it wasn't very funny at the time, but it's very funny now.
To look back on it.
Yeah.
Well, and Kirk Gowdy, when he made this, when he laid into you on the air that day, you know, there was a tremendous audience because this is back in the days of three channels.
That's all you had to do.
Yeah.
That's watch the World Series.
That's all you had to do.
Yeah.
And it didn't do well by him because, as you say, he ended up...
Look, he lost his job.
Yeah.
Look that up. NBC fired him.
You know, though, it's very interesting. I did read his obituary. I think he died in 2006.
I didn't even know he died.
No, no. Yeah, he's gone. He's went on to...
I'm not going to say good. That's not nice.
No. He went on. But he lived to a rather old age. But in his obituary, it was interesting because NBC was denying that they fired him for that.
Well... I don't know. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
He lost his job, and I kept mine.
That's right. That's right. So who got the better end of the deal there?
A guy can say something today about a call, but it went on and on. And if you remember, we had like 3 days of rain in Boston, and I'm sitting in a hotel with four FBI agents, and every place I went, they took me clear north of Boston one day to have lunch. Four agents. We walk into a restaurant that people wouldn't have known me from a block punt. And someone come over and said, "Mr. Barnett, how are you?" And I'm thinking, Jesus. But that went on forever. And then when I came home, I had security in Prospect. Because they threatened to shoot my daughter in the mouth. She was probably 4 or 5 years old. And, that's it aged my wife. I know it did. She's never said anything about that, but she didn't find. And then finally we went to Florida, and no one really knew where we were at.
What was that time like internally? As you say, it aged your wife. What were you going through all happening?
It's a mind game. You worry. You worry about your family. You worry about yourself. There's a lot of crazies out there. I mean, really, there was, and that's serious business.
Why do you think people got so, obviously Kurt Gowdy laying into you on the air, but why do you think people took that to that degree, death threats?
Well, that's from people saying stuff. Mm. Just like now, and I don't want to get it. If you call someone Hitler every day, there are kooky people. It's saying, he's really Hitler.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do this. I think it's bad. And that's just all I'm going to say about that. It does mean it makes a difference what you say or don't say.
Yeah.
And there's just things I don't believe you should say.
Well, and Bob, it's interesting because if you repeat something continuously, people will tend to believe it after a while.
Some will, yes.
Even if it's not true.
True.
Yeah.
It's just, people get the repetition, and if they're not hearing anything else, they'll begin that repetition. Well, nobody's counteracting this. I don't hear any any counter arguments, and so they begin to believe, well, it must be true because nobody else is challenging it. You repeat a lie often enough, some people will believe it, and they'll swear that it's true.
Well, can you imagine the pressure that somebody like an umpire would have on them calling these plays, especially in a World Series?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of stress there.
Yeah. Now, when my son was growing up, I think 14, he umpired, for our rec league, for the 1 year, and he said, "I can't take it." Yeah. I mean, the parents back then, bad call. That was a strike. Yeah. That was a ball. People get into it.
Most of the people didn't know whether a baseball was blown up or stuffed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind the fans. God love them. They paid my way for many, and they're still paying my way. But I don't mind the fans. I can handle that. It's just, I don't know. I think it's gotten better with the press and baseball. They may get mad and write something bad about you one day, but the next day they sort of get away from it.
How do you feel about the new strike zones being defined?
They're going to try this automatic strike zone.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The umpire, what will happen, he will have an earpiece, and if that machine says it's a strike, you call the ball, then they change it. I probably could still be umpiring. But I like where you have the challenge where you get the replay on the bases. I think that's good. I don't think they should mess with the ball and strike because I think that'll really affect the game. But I don't have a problem with any of that stuff. Anything that makes our game better, I'm for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm really – I just don't think I'd like to strike zone that way.
A lot of people talk about instant replay, and that's been a conversation for a long time. Do you think it's a good idea?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I really go back do. And look. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever missed anything in my life. Oh, God. This whole building, on the first flyer doesn't have a chance. Now, but there are times I probably could have used it. I know I could have.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with it. No. Yeah. I don't have the first problem with it. Because, like you say, none of us are perfect. The last guy that was perfect, they crucified. None of us have come close. Mm. So I'll live with that.
Yep. You'll live with it. You know, instant replay for years and years and years, and in all sports, football, baseball, I think primarily, that's always been a big discussion. Mm-hmm. Should we allow that? Should people have to call it when it happens and just live with it? Or should we be able to go back and look at the tape?
Well, the thing of it is, I think the big thing is betting. Now you're dealing with gamblers, and they've got a buku bucks on a game. And that's going to fall on if something screwed up? Is it the umpire or the football official or the basketball? So for that reason alone, I think let the replay, if it's that close or that, and then they'll turn them over. If you find out, you look at the replays, 98% or better, the umpires are right. So that's a pretty good thing.
Not bad.
Not bad at
Not
all.
Bad.
But for that 2% or 3%, and someone's got a lot of money bet on that game, that can make your life a living hell.
You know, it was interesting. Earlier this week, I think I was reading an article in which Governor DeWine had said that the one thing he regrets being governor is that he signed sports betting into law. He wished he had not done that.
I don't know that much about it. I mean, I don't gamble. I don't really. I don't know anything about it, gambling. I've been to Vegas. I remember we went out there on our honeymoon, and I put $5 in a slot machine, and I won $700.
Mm.
And I thought they'd spit it all out. I'm stuffing coins in my pocket. I didn't know they came and paid you. And I put another $5 in and won $250. Mm. That's the last time I ever gambled in Vegas.
Well, that's a pretty good, ending.
Pretty good $10.
Yeah, that's right. You ended up on the good side of it.
Yeah.
On the good side of the gambling.
I just never, because our, you know, when I first came up, we had one security guy that was an ex-FBI agent that followed baseball, followed us, knew where we went. Now they have a program where they must have, they've probably got 150 people on staff. They know every place we eat. I always demanded that they drug test us. And I got that through the union. We demanded they'd come in the dressing room and drug test them. I didn't want my kids at home thinking that I was doing something that I shouldn't be doing. Mm. So I insisted. I hope they still do that.
Who, in your opinion, are the greatest players of all time?
That's hard. I mean, I saw the Al Kay lines. I think the greatest player that it could hit, catch, run, and throw that I saw, boy, it's tough to pick one, is Ken Griffey Jr. when he was in Seattle. Now, he went to Cincinnati because that's where he grew up with his father, and he wanted to go back there, and I don't blame him for that. Mm. But when he was in Seattle, I think he was the greatest ball player I ever saw.
What do you think made him so unique?
It was in his genes. I mean, it came from his father. You know, he grew up in the Cincinnati clubhouse with his dad. And he could just do it. Plus, he is one of the nice. I mean, Ripken was good. All those guys were good. There's only one bad one I was ever around. That was Yastrzemski.
Mm.
Oh, he was. Let me tell you something. If I'm going down Route 4 today and he walked across the road, I'd run over him with a truck. And then I'd back up and hit him again.
Well, there you go.
So he was just a miserable person. But he's a great ball player and he's a Hall of Famer. And I wouldn't take that away from him. But he was just. I just couldn't stand him.
What was the problem with him?
He just was everything. One time, Rocky Rowe came up and he was on my crew. And we were in Boston. He called a pitch on him, and Yaz is giving him stuff. He said, "Now, Yaz." And he said, "Oh, don't give me any of that Yaz shit." That's what he said. So that was just him.
So he just had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Oh, for everything. And he was a great player. I can't take that away from him.
But by and large, the players were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think about, I worked 4,100 and some games, and to have one guy that just comes to mind when anyone asks, that's, my mind goes right to it.
Why so much controversy, even after his death, about Pete Rose?
Because Pete caused a lot of that. You know, if I really believe, and I don't have any knowledge of this, if Pete would have gone to Bart Giamatti, who was commissioner, and said, Mr. Commissioner, I've got a problem, and I need help. And if he would have told the commissioner what that was, I really feel that baseball would have closed in around him. Pete would have gone away for a couple of years, and then he would have came back to his proper position as a player, a great player in baseball. But he went, I didn't do it. Well, they had him on tape doing it when he was manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying ears?
Yeah.
So he just totally mishandled that.
And obviously it never happened for him. Never got in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think they'll probably, he might get in now, but I don't know, if I was his family, I'd let him put him in.
Well, I think Pete is on record when he was alive as saying that if they're going to do this when I'm dead, just don't do it.
Well, they might not.
They might not.
I don't know. But should he be in the Hall of Fame? Yeah. Because he wasn't the most gifted player, didn't have all the God-given ability, but he worked so darned hard that he made himself a great ball player, and he made players around him better. You know, it's like playing golf. If you go out and play golf with a guy that's an excellent golfer, you'll play better golf. If you play with a guy that isn't so good, you don't play so good. So Pete made players around him better.
You know, I've heard people who met Pete Rose say that he could be a little difficult to deal with.
Well, now, we roasted him down at the Aladdin Shrine in a black tie thing. Tommy Helms was there. I mean, the Marty Brenneman was there. I was on the dais to roast Pete. And we all ate in a separate room from the other people. And I just took in a dozen baseballs. Sharon and I went in. I said, here, sign these. And he sat there and signed them. And then I got up and told a joke. I said, whatever little town he came from in Ohio, I said, no birds fly. They all fly upside down. There's no one below worth you know what on. So he got up and gave me a high five. But he was great then. And then they rolled Coach Hayes out in a wheelchair. And I think that was probably his last appearance.
Well, that's kind of interesting you bring that up with the Ohio State-Michigan game being tomorrow. What was Woody Hayes like?
I didn't really know him. I didn't know. That's the only time I ever really, you know, I shook hands with him. But that's the only time I ever met him.
For all the press that's been made of him and brought of him over the last few years, obviously getting fired at the end of his career for hitting the ball player, what do you think his place is in Ohio history?
Well, I think he's a great, probably one of the greatest coaches in history. Had to be. He and Jim Beckler and all those guys, they were the best of friends. And, Jim Beckler was on his staff. So you can't take away. Who was the name of the player that he hit?
Charlie Baumann.
The very few people could answer
that. I got it.
You got it.
I got it.
That was just a Clemson kid that he just did something stupid.
Yeah.
And I remember I was going someplace, I think I was going to New York to do the Yankees, and I was going through the airport, and there goes Coach Hayes, an old man, no one around him. He's walking down through the terminal going someplace. That was so sad.
Mm.
Because he was up here.
He was up there.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. We've got to go to a break here. Former Major League umpire, Larry Barnett, will stay with us here. Bob Welsh is here. We're going to have a lot of fun this morning. Larry's going to sign the pizza crust, and we are going to top the WGH Christmas tree. No better people to do it with. We'll be back right after this.
Both our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was